On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
The overall depth of the good horses in Tasmania now, they continually come to Melbourne and beat our horses in better races.
My view has always been that the race should be assessed on the performances of the horses in that race.
Isn't that the whole wider issue here, that the whole group race pattern really needs to be looked at, that there are just way too many?
I still think that punters want the information. Get as much information as you can and then they can decide what they do with it. You can dismiss it if you want.
The positive is that they've been able to achieve something that's unachievable, and that's get people to the races outside of the sprint.
I think jumps racing is back to where it needs to be.
The showcase of country racing is the picnic circuit. That's where the crowds are.
Isn't being articulate and good at arguing your point a little piece of the jockey skill set?
I had a crack at the mongrel all jumps quarter yesterday and still managed to miss it.
Oh, welcome to The Verdict. I reckon Matty might have missed the mongrel quaddy at Flemington on Saturday as well, with most of the punters out there. It paid $109,000. It was one of the great upsets in Group 1 racing, but it was also one of the great stories as well. We're going to discuss that on The Verdict. We want your thoughts. SMS is 0416 90 50 52. Don't forget the Antler Luggage Champion Performance. Got a heap of entries coming through. I'll read some of them out as well. It wasn't just at headquarters we had great racing. Sydney, Arcadia Queen, the three-year-olds in the Run to the Rose. And what about over in Perth? Jade McNaught, the apprentice, riding six winners at Belmont. Not surprisingly, she has been one of the most popular nominees for the Antler Champion Performance of the weekend. Also, a lot of racing overseas, English, Irish and Ledgers. We've got a lot of news and updates from Lloyd Williams to give you over the next hour as well. Great to catch up with Mickey Lynch. How are you, mate?
I'm fantastic. And what a wonderful weekend of racing it was, not just here, but as you said, Michael, globally. It's this kind of crossover of the seasons, isn't it, in the Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere, and wherever you looked, you know, from Longchamp to Listowel to out the back of I don't know where in Australia, there were great races.
Yeah, the planes are arriving, aren't they? This is when we start to get really excited. It's one thing to watch the internationals, you know, doing their thing at these tracks all around Europe. It's another thing when they're here. You get that real sense, the feeling that it's game on, don't you? I was just thinking about that quaddie that I didn't get. Thinking that Sonny from Antler would have got a call Saturday night. We need 20 suitcases of your finest luggage, my man. And I reckon Sonny would have thought, they've got the quaddie.
Well, it would have been a nice day. 109,000.
We undersold the winner.
I went back and had a look at Gadding's form. Look, it was because he ran so arguably poorly first up.
He had to watch
unlucky,
the video,
but
though,
ran last. Yes, he was unlucky. He was a field of five. He ran last. But he's got form around the best WA gallopers. And you wrote an interesting article yesterday, which is spot on, I think. We maybe have been underestimating the quality of WA horses. When you look at Enticing Star, Arcadia Queen, what Scales of Justice was able to do, for Gadding to come out and win on Saturday, is that more a question mark over the quality of the local horses here or the performance of Gadding?
I reckon there's a few things involved. One was you can run a good last over an unsuitable trip and still come out and win a race like that. I think there was that. His CV, Scales of Justice versus, I was just doing a radio spot with the Perth guys, and everyone in Perth's loaded. Because they looked at the 100-1 versus the 3-1, and they said, well, there's not that much between these
two. Do you
two
know horses. The do you know the man who just backs every WA horse is Gareth Hall?
He, you know, he's on the wrong one, though. He
was
on
with WA.
He had 50 on the winner.
Did Hawley back the winner?
He had 50 on it.
50 on it?
I guarantee you he did.
Fair dinkum.
So this blind loyalty he has to the West is paying off at the moment. But I know it's easier to be a genius in retrospect, but he was probably a 20-1 chance, not a 100-1 chance, you know?
I think your points, there's a sort of mixture of truth in all of them. I don't think we've got any superstars here yet. I'm not knocking Mystic Journey for one loss, but she's got to sort of prove it consistently now against the older horses that she's top line. She was great against her older own age group. I think the West Australians, I don't think we do underestimate them. And it's the same with the best South Australian horses. I think whenever their trainers bring them from interstate, I think people are smart enough to look at it and go, well, they're not making the journey across the Nullarbor just so the owner can have a membership ticket.
I think we
today,
can still marvel at them though, because I reckon Perth is pretty good, because it's so far away, it's pretty much a self-contained racing and breeding
industry.
Yeah,
it's like Singapore or somewhere. It's certainly on its own. But
well, the breeding industry mainly, though. Like, Tassie at least has a bit of crossover with bloodstock, but Perth does pretty much its own thing with its own stock, and it's not a very big population of horses. So that was sort of the point of that story. Was
no, but I guess the point we could also make is, you know, over the three, I've been in this country now 3 decades, and from Placid Ark onwards in my time here, you've had the top line West Australian horses. They don't bring that many. I mean, several did start going to Darren Weir in latter years, but they were all competitive as well. I think when they know a good one when they see one, I think is what happens in WA.
Had a good chat to Anthony.
I was going to say, what does this mean for Mystic Journey, and what does Damo have to say?
His view was onward and upward, basically. The Turnbull will tell the story, confident he'll get there, she'll get there and run well. She was a bit fresh going to the gates, the four weeks between runs, beaten by an underestimated horse who just was a better horse on the day. Damo seems very, very happy that everything is still on track. I think the big conundrum for punters, and maybe even Adam Trinder, is...
Is he confident she'll run a strong 2040?
Yes, he is. He was pointing to the freshness going to the gates and the month between runs as all these little things. But, you know, that everything's different now. Now that there are new options, I think for every punter out there who thinks continue onto the Cox Plate, I think there are others who are probably thinking... If it wasn't for Arcadia Queen waiting for her, that the Golden Eagle would be a better option.
I mean, is there the fork in the road? She's going to run in the
Turnbull. Will be the
if she doesn't
race.
Stay the trip in the Turnbull or doesn't look effective, could he freshen her up quickly and then go back to the Golden Eagle? I actually think the Golden Eagle is a potentially far more of a disruptor than the Everest ever is going to be, because for Victorian racing, because you've suddenly got this massive pot of 7.5 million to race against what may well be considered the last three-year-old race of the previous season, you know, when they're fully sort of mature and really ready to go and you know a lot about them, but you're only up against your own age group.
But that's the shame about it to me as a purist, where... What we always look forward to every spring was that everything for the good horses, whether they were the top class three-year-olds or the proven weight for age horses or the dangerous Kiwis and all that, they all funneled to one race. And that was the great reality of the Cox Plate, was that it was the undisputed grand final. But now you got these menacing distractions like the Golden Eagle, and Trinder would never have been at a crossroad previously because it was only one pathway.
Paradoxically, strangely enough, because all these disruptor races are at such short distances, if handled and marketed properly, and they do market it very well, the Melbourne Cup should actually be a beneficiary because it is the only big money race over 3,200 metres. And the Caulfield Cup has that sort of singularity as well, doesn't it? That there, if you're a stayer, there is no temptation to go anywhere else.
Oh, well, no. And Peter Valantis has been very upfront about this. They're looking for the sprinters and the middle distance horses, not the stayers. Mm. But the question mark about
how long before Mystic, he comes for them.
Well, the question mark about Mystic Journey is a salient one, though. But look, she was even money favourite, so people say disappointing. The one thing you can't argue about was the time that they ran, and you listen to all the ratings experts. It rated through the race. She beat the others by 2 lengths. Mm. Yes, she couldn't get past Gadding, and yes, he was running away from her on the line, but it was still a bloody good run.
Exactly, and everyone's now we can move on with our lives and not pretend that she's got to put together a picket fence like Winx did. We can now accept that she's a very, very good horse who's going to get rolled probably one in every 3 times she goes around, and, you know, all the great champions of the past didn't go through unbeaten. So I just think...
You've got a niggle on it, though, don't you?
Oh, neither did Winx, actually, for what it's worth. I mean, she won 32, though.
So. You don't think she can run... You're not sold on it, are you?
I'm not sold. I'm not saying she can't, but I've just got a niggle. I got a niggle in a... Because I remember Lonro could run 2,000 in a soft circumstance, but he could never run a Cox Plate winning 2,000 metres because it's a different type of race. The pressure tends to go on earlier. I think if ever there's going to be a doubt on her running 22,000 metres, it's only going to be exposed in a Cox Plate and nothing else.
So because the pressure goes on so
just
far
a different
from
type
home.
Of pressure.
There's SMSs coming through now. Get on, Lee. You can pronounce this for me, Lynchy. Ligrasher.
Lisgracieux.
In the Cox Plate.
Of getting it right, special.
I was kicked out of French after 6 months at school. This could be the international year then? Look, if the locals aren't that strong, and we've been saying that Mystic Journey's a flag bearer, if there is any slight query over 2,000 metres, is it the day or the year you want to be on the internationals in the Cox Plate?
You know the other big, big Cox Plate horse who we're yet to see anywhere near proven at 2,000 metres is Tiakau Shark?
No, he hasn't. He got beat over
goes
what distance?
Goes to the Epsom.
What distance
goes
did he
to the
get
Epsom,
beat in?
But he's a flash run-on horse who, my gut feeling with him is that he's probably a miler, but without really knowing. So, I don't know. I just think for those who defend the Golden Eagle, the situation we might have is one standout superstar who goes around at $1.40 in it because there's nothing else around and the others are going to the Cox Plate. Do you really think that's a great scenario where you've got one superstar running our own race and a few of the others going to the Cox Plate and you're splitting the divisions?
No, we don't. We spoke about this when the race was conceptualised and when it was brought in, that this is the whole thing. But it's here. We have to deal with it. We'll talk about Arcadia Queen soon. My thoughts on if she ran in it, she'd probably win it. As J-Mac said, whatever you're training for. I want to talk about Gatting, though, for a little bit because 100-1, the WA... form, the WA horses, not all the owners were there on Saturday, and this little bit of vision and audio went viral. This is one of the part owners at home in his lounge room watching Gatting win the Maccabi Diva at 100-1. Now, it sounds as it should when you've got a 100-1 winner in a Group 1 race, but it doesn't do it full justice. The vision is outstanding. And the part owner, Shane Artemus, joins us now on Racing Pulse. Shane, I wonder in his day if he was a boxer because the shadow punching as Gatting crossed the line was simply outstanding. Shane, good morning. How are you going?
Morning, fellas. How are we?
Oh, I'm not as good as you, I'm tipping. What was that like on Saturday?
Yeah, very, very... entertaining, wasn't it? How's the form of Mark? Got a few lefts and rights going on there.
So that wasn't you doing the shadow punch.
No, I'm not getting the ring with that bloke. Never, not a chance. No, that's Mark. That's Mark Paratoro, mate. He's one of our other owners.
Oh.
It was he had to stay home. It was his birthday weekend. And how's the celebration on Mark?
It was magnificent. Now, Hunt, did you load up? Did you all have a crack at the hundreds?
Oh, look, I was on course. I was one of the only, the only owner on course with Macca. Let's say I had a little win.
Come on, declare. How little?
They wanted to pay me in a cheque, put it that way.
Very nice.
Well, the 450 big ones for the prize money was pretty good as well, wasn't it?
Very, very, very nice, mate. Look, the prize money, all that we won, mate, the memories is what it's all about, isn't it?
Hey, Shane, we're trying to work out whether we got it all horribly wrong and that a genuine 20-1 chance went around at 100-1 and whether we misread the Perth form. How did we all get it so wrong over here?
Oh, absolutely. Have a look at what he's done around Arcadia and you know, you ran second in the railways, absolutely nutted. We've been up against Scales of Justice a couple of times for two wins previous, so that's three from three now.
Tell us about...
He's a tough boy.
Tell us about Darren McCaller for trainer. Great performance. And I loved his post-race interview with Richo on .com. He actually said that he thought the horse was a chance, but he did slightly change his tune when he was grilled by stewards over the improvement of the performance.
Yeah. He was lucky enough to come across and stay with Macca. So, mate, one word for me, genius. I love him, mate. I love everything about Macca and the impressive racing. It just, you know, just Aussie battlers. But Mac's an interesting cat. He's good fun. celebrated long and hard into the night. Put it that way.
It was a big one. All roads now lead to the Cox Plate.
I believe so. There's another assignment in 2 weeks' time with the when we're going into the Underwood. So we'll just keep ticking them off, mate. Mac is bunkered down for a few more weeks yet. We'll just take it one race at a time, I guess. If the Cox Plate's where we end up, you know, it's dare to dream.
So it's the Underwood next into the Cox Plate. This is a lad who'll actually get better, won't he, as he gets up to even beyond a mile and a quarter, perhaps?
Absolutely. Look, he's only going to get better. You know, we said that. We went out Friday night to the football, and Mac and I were having a quite shabby, and we were hopeful, but we always said we'd be a better horse in 2 weeks' time.
Hey,
1800s is a little pet distance.
What's the I imagine the is there a set goal, Cox Plate? There's a McKinnon. There are shorter races and all that sort of stuff.
Not really. Look, I mean, ultimately the Cox Plate would be where we want it be, but you know, as Mark and said, we just take it as it comes. You know, we'd always set this as our first up assignment. Obviously, on the back of our performance in Perth, we were hopeful, but you know. We didn't read too much into what happened over in Perth. It was a tough run for him. But, yeah, look, ultimately the Cox would be where we want to be.
Well, it was a huge day on Saturday. Jamie Carr keeps the ride, no doubt?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Isn't she cool as a cucumber?
No, she's one of the best. One of the best.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Shane...
I can't see why not.
Enjoy basking in the glory of a Group 1 win at Flemington, especially when you get 100-1. And we look forward to seeing Gadding in a couple of weeks.
We'll see you out there in a couple of weeks, boys. Thanks for having me.
Shane Artemis, who's the part owner of Gadding. That's what dreams are made of. A Group 1 win, but when you can cop 100-1 as well.
Well, there's been a couple in the last few years, and the Mighty Boss went off at 100s when he won the Caulfield Guineas, so, you know.
What do we reckon? Sounds like a bit of a lad, Shane. Sounds like a bit of a punter. When he has a little punt on it at 100-1, feels to me like he's a 300 each way man.
Well, that's 30 grand. You don't need much more, do you?
I'm not surprised, though, the stewards wanted to have a look at this. I mean, it's gone round at threes on and beaten in a seven-horse race in the middle of winter at Swan River. And then, at Belmont behind Swan River. And then, you know, last of five last time over in inadequate.
Yeah, it was a polite inquiry from the stewards. That's all it was.
Before we talk about a few others, give us your ticks and crosses out of the beaten brigade. We spoke to Moods. He joined us on the Saturday morning live OB, and he said we expect Mr. Quickie to be steaming home. Well, he arguably could have won the race if he had clear running.
Well, he got clear running at the time when it most mattered, when a lot of others didn't. There was a lot of traffic there throughout the day and in that race. So Mr. Quickie at least had a clear crack at him down the outside. It's that time of year where you get a lot of that sort of traffic jammy sort of racing, don't you?
But so, he has to be a big tick. I mean,
he's a local too, which is really...
Looking at the sheets here, 14th at the 800, 13th at the 400, you know, so that's a big finish. I think Rostropovich, you know, gave signs for a horse that's going to... won a, you know, mile and a half to 2400, 3200. He again made a lot of late progress, doing his best work at the finish in seventh.
He's one of those important, you know how half of them go the wrong way and never, he's one that's gone the right way, Rostropovich, I reckon.
I have a little think about him. They gelded him, which was must have been a difficult decision to take. He's a son of Frankel. There wouldn't be many Frankel standing out here were he to go to stud. But they gelded him, and he had to have 6 months in quarantine in New Zealand coming back from Hong Kong. And that might have actually been a real positive for him, just a very long spell, because he'd raced in England, France, Ireland, Australia and Hong Kong as a three-year-old. So, you know, if they can get him right, he could well be a decent player in those in those big races.
I thought Scales Moody was alluding to this on the OB, wasn't he, Falgate, where he wondered whether it was an owner call, whether he went one run too many. He raced like that to me. He raced like a horse who was not always completely going to run in the race.
Can we give a big tick to Hartnell? Just what a warrior.
Well, yeah, he was stiff, great. Stiff again. He flies home for fourth.
There was some criticism that he should have been closer in the run.
Well, I think Craig Williams made the decision from that sticky barrier again. We spoke to him on the Saturday at the OB, and he said he wanted to see how the race unfolded. And he elected to be back while those up on speed, Mystic Journey and the like, they continue to fight the race out. The flashing light run, without a doubt, is Mr. Quickie, and there's a lot of SMSs which I'll read through in a bit. Question marks. Kingswell Dream, is he now looking for further? Second up a bit, Dower. Knight's Watch, what did you make of his run? Oh, I thought it was fair. Humidor, I think the jury's out. He ran on at the end. And Yucatan's the other one, and we've had a text conversation with Lloyd Williams this morning, and I asked him about Yucatan, and he said the run was okay. He needed it. He'll be fit in 4 to 5 weeks. They went too quick for him in the first half, and then he weakened. He's going to the Turnbull Caulfield Cup, then Melbourne Cup.
Yeah, Miles, certainly not his go. And we saw when he was fit what he could do last year in the Herbert Power against an ordinary bunch of stayers.
I've never known so many good judges to get a horse so horribly wrong as Yucatan in that race. Like, he was a flashing light one-run horse last year. He'd never done anything before or after the, you know, like the... it was an incredible to think he could have been a factor on Saturday, you know? So... Anyway,
does the fact that Hartnell's run his consistent sort of form again, you know, give us a good line that Mystic Journey's run, you know, wasn't she probably finished further in front of him than she did at Caulfield this time?
Well,
you know?
I've got an SMS here from Hariba who says Mystic Journey is a very good mare, but the fact that Hartnell, a 9-year-old, is competitive with her shows the lack of weight for age depth here in Australia.
Well, that's probably true as well, isn't it?
Well, there was the medical ward horses too, like Galo's Shop. I just think he raced your classic over fresh, been back from a long spell. Having said that, he did. He was beaten a long way and did fade out fast. So whether they, you know, it's, can you imagine him improving enough in a short period of time to be a factor this spring, or is this the prep and then maybe in the autumn he might just sort of pick up?
Was there a second up bounce with Kafila, who'd run pretty well, I think, hadn't she, first up?
Yeah, she's up to that open class. SMS about Mr. Quickie. Mr. Quickie's run in the Maccabi Diva Stakes shows. There is a good local chance for sure. Looks like if they go to the Caulfield Cup, she's a huge chance. Another one saying, does Mr. Quickie fit the Caulfield Cup profile? Derby Oaks form at 3, comes back at 4, runs well at weight for age, drops 5 kilos to the Caulfield Cup. 14 of the last 30 winners, among them Mongolian Kanja, Mika, Descarado, Diatribe. So that is a very, very astute tweet or text message that's come through. Moods wasn't sold on Saturday morning. Maybe post-run they will be. Like, he was still talking about possible Cox Plate Caulfield Cup preparation. You'd think Caulfield Cup on his run on Saturday, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but in a year, a Winx-free zone, maybe horses that wouldn't have been Cox Plate horses in the last 4 years suddenly are Cox Plate horses.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the betting for the Cox Plate here. I don't know a great deal about this Japanese mare, but she's obviously got decent international form. But Avilius, you know, he looks like he's been found a bit wanting. Holmesman could be the one. Clearly very effective
he's
at the Valley.
He's one of the obvious, isn't he? He's brilliant in the field.
He's obvious. But Dancer Teria, you know, he's like won a Group 1 in Germany, which is not normally, best solution aside, the best kind of guide here. Kluger got beat in Sydney last year. Latrobe sort of goes around getting beaten in Group 1s in Europe. So it might may well be worth a throw at the stumps with Mr. Quickie.
And you know what it doesn't seem to be this year? You know when you get the flat year and suddenly the three-year-old, the star three-year-old comes out of nowhere like Seamus Award. But
Dallasan?
I can't see anything in the three-year-old ranks that might be that come at them in a Cox Plate type three-year-old.
What about Dallasan? I mean, he's 4 from 5.
If he wins a Caulfield Guineas, the conversation's got to be had.
And he's, you know, he is bred to get further and further. I mean, I'm looking at his breeding by Dalakani, you know, he out of a Kitten's Joy mare, I think he really should be looking for a mile now. And now I know breeding makes mugs of us all, but I did speak to Leon after that race, Leon McDonald, and I said, are you going to go on a Derby prep eventually? He said, I'm having to resist the temptation to enter him because he's a bit brilliant at the moment.
Hard to imagine he's got the star factor to do it, but you never really know.
Well, you don't. He's 4 from 5. He's beaten a Group 1 winner in Scales of Justice on his first run-up as a three-year-old. You know, he's won a Group 2.
He should be unbeaten, really. He does it every time he goes to the track. Well, no more. And great to have a chat to Raquel Clark a little earlier. She speaks so well, rides magnificently, and it's great to see her being given the opportunities in these big races.
Just on Raquel, there's an interesting backstory to Raquel as well. Like, given how she's just this megastar jockey, and there was a situation in 2016 with an unusual quirk of the rules here where she was deemed not good enough to ride in Victoria. She was the champion Tasmanian apprentice. She was the best rider in Tassie. A suspension had cost her being actually the champion apprentice of Tasmania. Yet, under the local rules here, she wasn't able to ride a Tasmanian-trained horse in a race at Moonee Valley because she was deemed provincial class. It was a real stink at the time. She could ride at Sandown, but she couldn't ride at Moonee Valley, Flemington or Caulfield. And there was a bit of a... And so what I was thinking was that her performance on the weekend at Flemington, she would have remembered that. She would have been in the back of her mind thinking, you know what, there was a day when they didn't think I was quite good enough to ride here, and look at me now.
She was a victim of the coal diesel rule, I think. But first ride at Flemington, first ride up the straight, bang, Group 2 winner. It's a day she won't forget.
Leon McDonald has been an ardent supporter of female riders from day one. Claire, going back a long, long time, and Kayla Crowther, I think he's used a fair bit as well. So he was one of the very first of the old school trainers to absolutely fully embrace the female riders.
And I and others did speak to him after about the pressure that he might have been under, even on Saturday, to take Raquel Clark off and put on a senior Melbourne rider. And he said though, all the jockeys' agents were sitting with their fingers poised over the speed dial button at the 200, just in case she got it wrong. And he said there'll obviously be pressure going to the Guineas. But he's been through this before, hasn't he? Because he had to take Claire Lindop off Southern Speed in the Caulfield Cup. Do you remember? I think, wasn't
Craig
that?
Williams?
Yeah, Craig got on. But wasn't that the owners wanted Craig Williams to ride, I think.
Just on the subject of the female jockeys and their dominance on the weekend, this text message came through. Now, Michael, on the subject of Jamie Carr, when are you and all the other males in this industry going to stop referring to the jockeys as women or men? The women surely deserve to be referred to and talked about as jockeys first. Why do you constantly bring it up? Have a good look around the country. Women are almost always get 50% of the winners or outride the men in country New South Wales, Queensland, Victoria. So it's not a shock at all. Time to talk about them as jockeys only.
I agree totally, although it helps with context sometimes when you talk about how advanced a certain group of jockeys has become when you've got the context of where they've come from. So it's got nothing to do with being demeaning towards the females. It's just putting some context into what you're talking about.
Now, I agree. And there is no thought of, you know, splitting them because of what their abilities and classes are. It's like when we talk about male and female horses, almost, so to speak. That does raise a point, though, which I did see raised on Twitter over the weekend. Should they be losing the Miz in the form guides?
This has been going on for 15 years, this debate. I thought it had been eliminated from most form guides. We spoke to Racing Victoria about this when I was back at the paper a few years ago, and it was some publications do it off their own bat. There's no directive from the authority to have Miz and all that in the form guides. And the funny one about Jamie Carr was she was never Miz Jamie Carr, because originally they thought Jamie was a he.
Yeah.
So I totally agree. It's ridiculous. But I don't think it's got anything to do with it being officially deemed that way. I think it's certain form guides still hanker onto it, you know?
We're going to take a break. Plenty of SMSs coming through. We'll get to all of those in the hour. Don't forget, continue to send through your nominations for the Antler Champion Moment of the weekend. Got a ton of those. The winner will walk away with a $100 Antler backpack. After the break, we're going to talk about another star female, this one of the equine variety, Acadia Queen.
The Verdict for OTI Racing, where sport and lifestyle collide. Find out more at oti.com.au.
Well, I think the performance of the weekend was Acadia Queen. She was heavily backed. She had the boom on her, and she absolutely delivered on Saturday in the Theo Marks. We spoke to James McDonald earlier on the program, and he basically said, look, whatever she is trained for, he thinks she can win. I still think she's better suited in a Cox plate, but on that performance on the weekend, she can definitely win an Everest, and they're going to go straight in, I believe, is the plan.
It looks a bit zigzaggy, the preparation, but maybe when you take away the fact that it's up in distance and down in distance and so on, that it that maybe the gap between runs, starting off at 1300, then going to a high pressure Everest, maybe with the gap it makes sense, and then up to the Golden Eagle. So it maybe not look as haphazard as it sort of at first seems, but I agree. I just think she's a megastar. I really do. I didn't quite get the fact that not everyone was in her corner after the weekend.
Well, it was interesting. Yesterday morning on Sky Racing's Thoroughbred Central, their Sunday review program, Lizzie Gels and also Ron Duffercy went head-to-head on Acadia Queen. It was great viewing. This is a snippet of the debate they had.
It's 280 days between runs. It's very, very hard to do at that level.
I agree, but I'm not a Maud like everyone else, and I won't be. I will stick by what I feel is right, and that I don't think I'm not going to just run away with thinking that she's the next next big thing.
And you're entitled to that opinion. And anyway, only time's going to answer that. Will answer that question. The odds are in your favour at this stage at 1,200 metres next time.
Mm. Which side of the fence are you on, Lynchy?
Can I get splinters here? You know, I saw this filly win in Perth when the good people of Perth Racing brought me over there late last year for the Kingston Town Classic. She was fantastically impressive. That was 1,800. And that trip on Saturday, 1,300, the Theo Marks, shortest distance she's raced that for a year. Can she come back a further 12, another 100 to the Everest? I don't know. I mean, obviously, James McDonald's sitting on her and he knows the engine that he's gone under her, but she will be up against absolutely knock them down, drag them out. Warriors like Red Zell will just go to the front and make it hard. Santa Ana Lane, she won't have ever come up against a swooper like him, I don't think. And, you know, who knows if the ground is fast, if 10 Sovereigns comes from Coolmore or if it's a bog. Coolmore's filly that won in Ireland yesterday, although I wouldn't give her much of a chance. But you'd have thought that the hard, tough Warriors would present a very different test.
I reckon she's a total megastar. The only thing is, it's the interesting thing about the Everest is, because the slots are designated, unless there's injury or complete loss of form and stuff, we kind of got a good idea now about how that race is going to map. And I was listening to a couple of the Sydney commentators during the week saying, it is going to fall into Red Zell's lap again, unless a nature strip somehow finds his way into the race. Every runner in the race, bar Red Zell, is a get-back run-on runner, and that'll be Arcadia Queen as well. So I just think the challenge of the Everest isn't as much the zigzagging back in distance. It's the way the race is present. You'd need a nature strip in it to set it up for an Arcadia Queen, wouldn't you?
Probably a swooper, yeah. Could he do
it
again?
That's a good point.
Could Red Zell win it three times in a row? That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so my query going into yesterday was that everything is different for Arcadia Queen. She was in her comfort zone in Perth. She loved Ascot and she had Willie Pike and she had all of this and that. But the way given I was one of the ones who had the big query going in, I was thinking that she was super impressive on Saturday because I thought there were things against her, seemingly, but there weren't. And she was... I think she's a total champion. I really do. I just think she's the best horse.
But is she a total champion over 1,200?
I think she's a total champion over anything up to 1,800 or 2,000. And my gut feeling is, as much as I think Mystic Journey is a fantastic filly, if you ran them both next Saturday over a mile or whatever somewhere, I think Arcadia Queen's a better horse.
Gee, there's a difference in their stature, isn't it? She's hulking and little Betty, the fine Mystic Journey.
Interesting. Anyone got an opinion on that? Pound for pound, Arcadia Queen, Mystic Journey?
I've been in Mystic Journey's corner all the way through. Gee, I was impressed with Arcadia Queen.
I think maybe over 2,000 I'd be favouring Arcadia Queen just because she's gone out there and beat... I mean, you know, we forget how hard it is for three-year-olds over those sorts of trips to beat the tough, seasoned horses. She did it as a three-year-old filly in December of her three-year-old year in Perth. Okay, it's Perth, but we've seen what Gatting and the likes have come out and done now here. So the quality there surely has to be reasonable.
And I don't want to sound like a broken record, but every time this happens... I start to think about it, is forever and a day, Arcadia Queen and Mystic Journey are going to go around copping a weight allowance off the boys forever and a day.
Yeah, you're big on the girls. The top class girls shouldn't be getting this. Just what you said about the Everest and the structure of the race, if you go through it, you're spot on. Centre and a lane, Pirata, get back run on, Red Zell on speed. Classic Legend is an on speed runner. It's one that could be up there. Libertini unlikely to go there. Elise, if she does, comes from behind. Enticing Star, be interesting to see her. Graf could be up on speed, and Sunlight's the other one. But it's not a breakneck speed map, is it?
Where does Enticing Star amongst the Bob Peters galaxy of riches, where does she fit in?
Well, you speak to, again, people like Gareth Hall and others who come from the West and love it. They think that Enticing Star is a better sprinter, a better chance over 1,200 than Arcadia Queen.
And has he got Galaxy Star as well? That's one of his.
She's
too,
retired
isn't he?
Now.
Oh, she retired.
I can't. I know it's 13 million and she's got a slot, but in an ideal world, I can't. I can accept the Golden Eagle for Arcadia Queen. I just can't factor in the Everest as a. Other than the 13 million and the obviousness of it, I can't see it as a. a proper race for her? I don't know. It just doesn't seem the right sort of...
The 13 million is the draw, exactly. Isn't it? Yeah. You know.
What do you make of the three-year-olds? I think there are three outstanding three-year-olds in Sydney. Bivouac, yes, yes, yes. I thought his return was really good. And Exceedance, who ran well again, all heading to the Golden Rose. So, you're a Bivouac man. You want to stick with him?
Oh, I just thought there was... I thought on the wet track... I know Bivouac had wet track form and that, but there's a difference between having wet track form coming through the ranks and when push comes to shove. And Exceedance obviously got through the wet ground better than he did last start. So no enormous surprise to me that he turned the tables, and I think he's a top-of-the-ground horse. But I just think there's, like Delasan, I just think there's 10 bivouacs, you know?
There's 10 bivouacs.
No, there's a lot of high-class three-year-old colts, and he's one of them, you know?
Well, I think of the ones in Sydney on good or decent ground, I would think Bivouac has, you know, done it. He's done it at Caulfield. He's done it now, turn the tables on Exceedance. I think a lot will depend on just how the track plays. If it's a bog... Well, Exceedance, surely, on what he did before, will come into it. I like Dallasan, as I've said. He's done nothing wrong. And, you know, possibly it's the inverse of we're all giving a big rap to WA now. We're maybe just keep writing them off because they're from South Australia.
I know. But I love, we have to have these conversations because it's what racing's made of. But it's amazing how 80% of the time the factors on the day override every single thing we're saying now. And it's who you, where you draw, because they're all even where you draw, race how the shape. Track's racing on the day and all that sort of stuff. So... We can have a bit of a vague throw out the stumps here and now, but at the end of the day, it's going to be determined by the little quirks on the day.
A lot of SMSs coming through, and a lot of them for the Antler Champion moment of the weekend. Jade McNaught, super effort. Doesn't happen very often. Rides six winners. Young jockey at a Metro meet. That gets my vote. I concur. There are a lot. That is just an unbelievable performance. She's leading the jockey premiership over there. Six winners as an apprentice. Champion moment was Maddie Stewart walking around with his two bodyguards at Flemington on Saturday.
Pooch and Chunky Monkey, a.k.a. Pooch and Chunky Monkey.
Lloyd Williams is laughing after Mystic Journey's failure. Homesman can't be beaten in the Cox Plate. That's from Johnny G at Endeavour Hills. Michael, I'd like to submit my Antler Championship of the weekend to Jade McNaught, young jockey superstar. Another SMS down here, Jade McNaught, easily champion performance of the week. Trainer Kerry Edwards, rocks the castle trainer. One small lady training team, but a brilliant effort to win the listed race on the weekend with her gelding. Perfectly placed this prep. And that is a very good nomination. She's done a brilliant job with rocks the castle.
She has, yeah. Small team, very, very tough at the top at Flemington on a feature Saturday these days.
Small team, three horses she has in work, she told us, and after the race, and listed winner now. And who's to say he can't, you know, he just keep improving with more racing. You know, he won that reasonably well, didn't he?
Absolutely. I just wanted more of an overview, career overview, than particularly on Saturday. I want to just dip my lid to Nikita Berryman, who
absolutely,
who has been one of the stalwart top class female, jockeys of the last 10 or 15 years. Rode her first Group 1 winner, and maybe only Group 1 winner at a very young age, and she's been a great mentor to the Michelles, the Caitlins that have all come through. When they all say who's been your greatest influence and carer, it's always Nikita.
I think it's fair enough to refer to her as a woman jockey, because she was coming through and trailblazing at a time when it wasn't easy, you know, when girls were not getting many rides.
SMSs, keep them coming through. Nikita, we're going to hopefully get Nikita in on tomorrow. In fact, it's been confirmed. Nikita Berryman will be live in studio tomorrow from 9:30. So
brilliant.
Can't wait to have a chat to Nikita tomorrow. Matty had a bit of a tough day on Saturday. He lost on the punt. And at our live broadcast on Saturday morning, we had a special guest who was Miss Universe in 2014. This is how Matt's day started.
Matt's recently single, if you haven't worked it out. What would be his number one most endearing quality?
That he rips off everyone. And I'm from Newcastle, so I like a bit of banter, but I think he's too old for me.
Just a touch.
And I am dating a lovely Melbourne boy, by the way, so I don't want to sound like I'm single.
Too old for me. We're going to go out to a break. The SMS of the morning, clubhouse leader is... I've got to be careful with this segue, but I did like this SMS from Krazza. Mr. Quickie is a local and something all us blokes can equate to.
and its search for a song, maintaining a 2.5-length lead over Master of Reality, and then comes Latrobe, Southern France's next. They've all got work to do racing down to the final furlong. Its search for a song out 3 lengths clear of Master of Reality, and then Southern France, being followed by Latrobe. Cross Counter, Kew Gardens is staying on the outside. This is an unforgettable day for Chris Hayes and Dermot Weld, and the colours of Moidler. Search for a song has won the Alice at Ledger, sponsored by Cobra Group. Kew Gardens stayed on.
Oh, what a performance that was overnight in the Irish St Ledger. Search for a song, that 3-year-old filly winning the St Ledger, defeating a number of stayers who are earmarked to come out here for the Melbourne Cup.
Well, she's basically just won the Melbourne Cup, I think, there. Put that race at Flemington. Fantastic ride by Chris Hayes. Decided the tempo wasn't right and she was throwing her head around, took it up about 7 furlongs of a mile from home, kicked clear and said, come and get me if you're good enough. And none of them were good enough. She got all the weight allowances, but a fantastic effort. Kew Gardens, who's the cup top weight, flashed home late for second, unlikely to come.
He's
I wouldn't
coming.
Think, yeah. Third home, Southern France. That'll be encouraging for the Aussie connections who've bought him. And Kieran Maher, I believe, went across to
raced in his colours.
So yes, to watch him race
and
in
ran
the,
well.
The
Cole
green
McKenna
and blue
was
hoops.
There. He had a chat to Joe on talking.
Yeah,
a bit.
And Cross Counter, you know, fourth. You know, not that fantastic. You might have expected him to be a bit closer. And then we had the trifecta of Lloyd's horses, 5th, 6th, and 7th.
And Lloyd's been kind enough to send us a text this morning with the rundown of what he thought of the horse's performances. Master Reality, good run, did most of the work. Twilight Payment needed the run, changed stables, hasn't had a run since June. Latrobe was disappointing to the eye, but not according to the jockey. Possible improvement will be there. Joseph said he was unhappy with the rider, Master of Reality. This is Joseph O'Brien. Twilight Payment will improve, and Latrobe thinks will improve with the run. The other Lloyd and Nick horse that ran over the weekend, Buckhurst, ran second.
Second in a Group 3 over 2,400.
He's not coming to Australia. No. He's going out for a spell.
But he'll be one for next year, I think. You know, he's only a three-year-old at this point as well. There were two Northern Hemisphere three-year-olds entered in the Cup. Didn't cover themselves with glory in the English St Ledger. Il Paradiso, who has been a bit of a talking horse because he got so close to Stradivarius. He was beaten, you know, 300 from home in the Ledger, finished 5th of 8. And Dashing Willoughby, I think, was last of 8. So they didn't really enhance their Cup's prospects, I wouldn't have thought, with those runs.
And doesn't have any influence on the Melbourne Cup. But what about the performance of Pinatubo? It was just a phenomenal win.
Frankel-esque. I mean, they're talking in England now of him being rated higher as a two-year-old than Frankel ever was. I think he's 5 from 5 now. He's won at Royal Ascot. He's won at Goodwood. He's now donkey-licked two of Aidan O'Brien's best two-year-olds, beaten them 5 or 6. He's down. William Buick's grin as he went over the line told it all. That was one great performance this weekend. Another one, magic.
Frankie Dettori.
Well, Frankie Dettori winning in France and winning the two Group 1s on the Saturday on Logician in the English St Ledger, and then on Starcatcher in the Prix Vermeil at Longchamp. But got to give it Magical. She's been running up the backside of Enable for a year and a half. No Enable in the field. Ireland's biggest 10 furlong, 2,000 metre weight for age race, and she just goes and wins as she likes. What a tribute to Enable that is.
Can't you get unlucky in life? If Enable had never been born, Magical would be the one they're talking about, as she would have won the Breeders' Cup. She would have won.
Yeah, I know. But it's the Hayless Black Caviar story, isn't it?
And also, big news over the weekend, Crystal Ocean, the retirement of that galloper as well.
Yeah, he suffered a career-ending injury in track work at Newmarket. Sad to see, but at least we got to see him racing until he was a 5-year-old. And I think maybe there is a little bit of a change in mindset even over there now. They're starting to keep some of these horses racing. Enables 5, Magical's 4. They, who knows, they may keep her in training next year as well.
Yeah, a lot happening overseas, and we'll keep you updated with everything. We'll
focus on it with Paul Bloodworth during the week from a Melbourne Cup perspective as well. Time to have a chat to Leo Schlink, who, of course, is the chief racing rider at the Herald Sun. Big news coming out over the weekend, Ree. The Aquanita case, which seems like it's been dragging on for years. But for Liam Birchley, it was a huge decision over the weekend or late last week. Leo Schlink joins us this morning on The Verdict. How are you, Leo?
I'm well, thanks, Michael. How are you?
Very well indeed. For the listeners out there who aren't 100% au fait with everything, you had an interesting article in the Herald Sun today. And has it come down to a mistake from Racing Victoria or their lawyers that has helped Liam Birchley in his case?
Well, it has helped the particulars of the charge as they were laid out. And this matter was raised, Michael, during the VCAT hearing as to the absence of the words planned or attempted. And so on that basis, Deputy President Heather Lambrick went through each of the counts against all of those involved, and that's where the reductions, or in Liam Brewster's case, the complete overturning of his disqualification, the guilty verdict from the RAD board. So she found that at no stage during the proceedings did Racing Victoria seek to amend the particulars of charge, despite being placed on notice by each of the applicants. And she found that the charge and particulars do not extend to the words attempted or planned administration. So she made her judgments on the basis of actual administration, and that's why we've seen the differences in the number of counts on which these people have been found guilty.
Was Racing Victoria sort of blindsided by the technicality? It seems like it's a little bit of an own goal, in a way, from RV.
Well, Matt, with you look at Robert Smurden, he was on 115 counts of race day administration, or under the broader thing of misconduct, etc. He's gone to 78. Stuart Webb from 3-1, Tony Basil from 7-2, and Liam Birchley from 3-0. So this matter was raised mostly by Liam Birchley's legal team throughout it, and Heather Lambert made the point that even if Racing Victoria at that point during VCAT had sought to amend the particulars, they might not have been given leave to do so. So effectively, by the time it got to VCAT, the ship had sailed.
And just quickly, Leo, what's the situation with the others that have been suspended? Robert Smurden, obviously, and the like. Where is that with the VCAT appeals?
So the next phase, Michael, is that there's the administrative mention on October 15th. And all parties, including Racing Victoria, have got 28 days from Friday, last Friday, to seek a leave to appeal to the Supreme Court. So it could end up there, yeah.
Appreciate your time, Leo.
My pleasure, guys.
Leo Schlink, it's an interesting situation, isn't it, what's occurred there? Just a couple of things before we wrap up, and I announce the Antler champion moment of the weekend. A couple of SMSs talking about Jade McNaught. She's a mature age jockey. Yeah, she's 30 years of age.
30, yeah. Absolutely. Had been an equestrian rider earlier.
The story of hers is quite remarkable. We'll get her on during the weekend. Just need to make mention, condolences and our thoughts with the Jason Warren family, the team, not the family. That was a terrible situation with Antar on the weekend. And racing lost another stalwart over the weekend, a name that I used to see growing up in all of the number one publications and racing publications as well, Matty.
Yeah, Les Obrium was a terrific guy. He was an astute judge. He died this week. He used to sit in the grandstand with his stopwatch at Balnarring and Mornington whenever there was a special gallop of a star horse. I remember Maccabi Diva, when Lee was saying she was going to Sandown and she'd go to Mornington. The only one that ever seemed to know was Les Obrium sitting there with his stopwatch in the grandstand. And so he was not just a great clocker, he was a great clocker. He really nailed it. He knew what a good gallop looked like. He was a very, very astute punter. He was always at the internationals at Werribee. In fact, last year, here's a lovely little image. I saw him out there and I said, oh, it must be annoying to get here every morning for Mornington. He took his camper van and he and his wife camped at the Werribee River at Werribee South, put it in the caravan park, and he spent most of his day fishing and kayaking. So Les was a lovely guy. Hayley, his daughter's a lovely, lovely woman. And
works on the scales.
Yes, yep, yeah. Absolutely. So a really good fella.
That is absolute dedication to the cause. He wasn't a gentleman I knew personally, but Sporting Globe, I think, yes. He used to appear in when I used to buy that when I first came here. Mm. Yeah, a name that always had a lot of people speaking highly of him.
Absolutely. We're out of time, gents. It's been a big show. Each and every verdict will be getting even more big throughout the Spring Carnival. So much to talk about. Thank you to everyone. There's been so much correspondence this morning. We haven't been able to get through all of them, but a lot of them in regards to the Antler Champion moment of the weekend. And overwhelmingly, the most popular response was Jade McNaught's 8 winners in Perth over on the weekend. And the first person to send a message in via Twitter was Joel. So, Joel, congratulations to you. We'll make contact with you. You have won a Antler luggage backpack valued at $99. We're going to give these away all throughout the Spring Carnival. So don't despair if you missed out today. We'll be having the Antler Luggage Championship moment each and every day. Tomorrow, huge show. Greg Nichols live in the studio from 9 o'clock. We'll find out what the latest is at Racing Australia. They had a board meeting a couple of weeks ago. High on the agenda was the situation re Cobalt as well, and Nikita Berryman at 9:30 in the studio as well. Gents,
little story on the website about this little famous, wonderful little magpie at the Mick Kent, Nicky Burke Stables. Have a look about Charlie the Chirpy Champion. It's a lovely little story
We'll talk about that tomorrow. It's a remarkable story of Mick Kent and his new furry little friend. Lynchy, enjoy the week.
Indeed, and look forward to next Saturday at Caulfield when we do it all again.
Absolutely. That's it for the verdict. Time for the 10 o'clock news. On the other side of this, though, don't go anywhere. Warren Huntley and Harry White, welcoming Harry White to the RSN team. We'll preview the meeting at Bairnsdale.